Hey everyone, this is Carrie Lee.
This is Daniel.
And this is the Actor Hack Podcast.
We're coming to you from Brooklyn, New York, and we have Charlene with us.
I'm from Los Angeles, originally a Valley girl. I went to UC San Diego. Well, I'm a singer-songwriter, so I, you know, my parents, it wasn't really, they weren't really supportive. So I was like, let me get the college degree, and then as soon as I finish, I'm going to go after my passion. I majored in communications, which was pretty broad, and it was fine, but I definitely didn't feel, it was more like a means to an end. It was like, let me just get the degree. Both my parents actually didn't graduate from college, so it was a very big deal for them that education was number one. So I'm like, let me just get that done. Not that I didn't enjoy it, I just felt like, I want to get my life started, you know?
Yeah.
Like I think as all artists do, or maybe all young people do, I don't know.
And so then how did you find these internships then that you were doing?
I just would call, like I was really resilient, I was really like proactive, and my first internship was at MCA Records, which doesn't even exist anymore, but it was a part of Universal. And I'm also really good at interviews, I've realized now. So I just would get pretty much everything that I asked. And plus, you know, as an intern, you're working for free, you know. So I got that, and then just having one under my belt. The next summer, I got Arista Records, and that was right around the Bodyguard time.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it was like,
cool.
And so I worked in soundtracks, or so I was helping doing all the mailers, you know. I don't know, just around that time, soundtracks were such a big deal.
Yeah, definitely.
And I was like, I want to write a song for a movie. You know, like, I had all these ideas, so that was really cool. And I just loved being around music, like, all the time. So I'll backtrack. So because my parents weren't so supportive, I knew I was a good singer. Like I would always get complimented, you know, oh, you have a nice voice. But there was something that like freaked me out when I would get up in front of people and sing. So I knew I needed a lot of work to do. So I started taking singing lessons when I was 16. Like I got a job just to pay for lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing because I actually found this guy who really believed in me and believed in my talent and reassured me, like, no, you really have something special, you need to nurture it. So all along I was taking singing lessons, then I started to do performance workshops just to get comfortable in front of people. Didn't play an instrument, didn't write a song at this point, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So once I finished college, I remember having a conversation with my voice teacher, and he was like, you know, if you really want to do this, you need to start writing your own songs. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. Or at least that's my first thought. But then I'm like, well, when I really think about it, I did always write like little jingles when I was a kid, and I'd always do commercial, you know, whatever. So I just started writing diary stuff, and then how did this happen? I was temping at Warner Brothers, and I met, like, the bus boy at the commissary who, you know, was an intern or had a recording studio. I mean, this is, like, how funny the universe works, right? And we were talking, and he was like, you know, you can come in and record a song. I'm like, okay. So, this is what I remember. We went to Cal State Northridge, which was this little community college or whatever, or state college, around my area. And we went to the practice rooms. And I was like, let me just sing you the song that I wrote, and he can play piano. And so I just sang, and he was, like, playing the chords underneath me. And I just thought, well, that's easy. I can figure out how to do that, you know? So long story short, we ended up writing the song, my first song. We recorded it in the recording studio, and it was just, like, unbelievable to me. I was like, I can't believe I wrote the song.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
It was, like, amazing. And then it just all happened. It's funny how, again, the universe just, like, plants you the perfect people around you that you need, that you want, you know, to support your dreams. So when I graduated, I went back to L.A. because I was like, well, I can do this in L.A. That's, like, the capital of this industry. And I worked at, my first job was Barry Manilow's management company. It was great because I really understood what the relationship of a manager to the artist versus the record label's relationship to the artist was. I understood, like, how an artist makes money touring. Like, I understood, you know, if you write your own music, like, because, you know, Barry Manilow has a huge catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And he just performs, like, and goes on tours, and he makes tons. Like, that was what really sustained that whole management company, was him touring and the song. So it was really cool for me to understand what the relationship to the artist, like the manager, publicist, agent, label, you know, all these different people. So that was really a great learning experience for me. And so my plan was just to work in the industry and do music on the side, like quietly on my own, not tell my parents either. And then eventually just make relationships, and then, you know, when I trusted somebody, like, here's my demo, this is really what I want to do. That was my idea. So I stayed at that job for maybe like 8 or 9 months, and then I got really kind of, I don't know if I want this commitment of this job, you know, I still want to be an artist. So I quit, and I attempted this really like impressive recording studio. Like Elton John came in, Alanis Morissette, all these big people, right? This would be great because then maybe I can sneak in studio time and make my demo, right? I didn't love it there either. This is a very common theme in my journey. But I don't like something, I just quit. because I get another job very easily. I started taking piano lessons because I'm like, when I figured out, oh, it's easy to, you know, just sing a melody and then find the chords to go along with it, let me just take piano lessons. So my old teacher, my old bass teacher was like, here's this number, whatever. So I took like 6 months. So I figured out, it just came quickly to me. I figured it out. And so I had a couple of songs. At the time, there was this music magazine called Music Connection, which I guess would be the equivalent to like Craigslist.
Okay.
You would go into, I mean, they would profile artists and everything like that, but it was all about the independent artists, right? So you look in the back and there was classifieds. So I would just look in that and it would be like, you know, producer looking for new artists to produce demos, blah, 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 blah. And there's one guy, I just really vibed with him. So I'm like, listen, this is my first demo. I really want to record these songs, blah, blah, blah. So I went up to his place. And at this point, I had gotten a job at Sony Music. I know, it just keeps going. I was working at Sony Music. And I was like zipping up to Malibu. He had this like really nice studio in Malibu. And I just played him that one song that I recorded with that guy. And then he was like, all right, you know, of course, you know, I had to pay him and everything like that. And oh, you're so great, I'll do it for you. But it was great because at that point, nothing, it was all analog, which I don't know if you're familiar. I mean, it was just back a long time ago when it was like you had to do each vocal track a million times to like add those layers as opposed to like digitally now where it's so easy to just like once and then like you multiply. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
that makes sense, yeah.
It just took, but the quality, there was something really special about it. It was really rich and warm because we really worked on background vocals. It was just amazing too. It was like the secret passion, the secret life that I didn't tell, because this was my plan. I was gonna finish that demo and then I was gonna tell my dad this is what I want to do, and he couldn't say anything about it because I'd already done it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because I knew the thing that would really impress him was the work.
Yeah.
You know, like I did this on my own. That's, I finished
and
the demo.
How many songs were on it?
I did 3 songs.
Okay.
I had a boyfriend at the time who was a guitar player or went to school for music, and so he loaned me his guitar and I just kind of taught myself how to play. So I'm like, I need to get better. So I went to open mics every week, and that's really when I started to get into this whole community of the singer-songwriter artist world in LA, which was so important, especially to nurture that dream, because we were all in it together, and I was going 3 times a week, and it was so fundamental to my growth. You know, you write your name on a list, and then they call your name, and it's like a random thing where they call you, you know, in a random order, and you have like 1 song, sometimes 2, and at this point, in LA, it was so crowded, it was so just inundated with so many artists wanting to get up and sing that you only have 1 song, and sometimes, at the time, it was Highland Grounds was like the most packed, and you would get bumped. So you would show up early, sign up, and they would tell you, these are the people that are bumped, sorry, but next week you can come and you'll be the first 10. But it was like you were playing for like 50, 60 people. I started to book shows. Like the very first open mic I got at Highland Grounds, they called me to do a show. So I'm like, oh my God, I need to find somebody to play for me because I wasn't, you know, confident to play for myself at the time. So I just kept doing that. I kept playing shows, writing, getting better at playing and singing at the same time because that was really difficult. It was like learning a whole new language, you know. I was like 25, 26, so I wasn't like so young, you know, comparatively to like everybody else who maybe had been playing and singing their whole life, you know. And plus you get to know other musicians and then they'll be like, hey, I'm playing at Boba, you want to open? Or have you heard about this place? Like, we would all support and help each other. That's community is so important, as you know, being an artist, and finding your community, finding the people that are willing to support you is so important. And then when I was ready to leave the job is when I sent some people like, hey, I have this CD, I'm actually an artist.
And how was that received?
It wasn't like, oh, sure. It wasn't like open arms, warm. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
In fact, I had a coworker give my CD to one of the song pluggers without saying who it was. Just be like, this is a friend of mine, to see what he says. Because I just wanted somebody's opinion, a real industry opinion. And so that was cool because I got feedback that I wouldn't have probably gotten had it just been me giving it to him. You know?
Right. Yeah, that's great.
And is a song plugger what it sounds like? Like, is this a person that's, like, pitching this to radio stations?
So they're pitching it to artists.
Artists.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
Because I was in the publishing side. So, like, okay. Yeah, we were representing writers.
Cool.
So I decided to leave the music industry. I'm like, I can't do this and want to be an artist. Like, it was just too conflicting. And it's funny because at the time, I actually was offered a job to be an A&R.
Okay.
At Universal Music Publishing. Basically, that position would be, I would be out at clubs and I would be scouting for other writers and signing them. But I just felt like, I can't do that. Like, that would be like giving up my dream.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say any of that, but I was like, no, I need to just kind of change direction completely. So I got into television.
I would imagine that doing that scouting would be kind of painful, just because it's like, that's what... You want to be on the other side of that.
I would have no life 24/7. Like, it's hard. Yeah, so I got out. I worked at the time it was called Disney. Fox Family Channel.
Oh,
We were at the beginning of that, yeah.
And what did you do there?
I was a promo scheduler. So it was like a really simple, easy coordinator position. I didn't have to answer anyone's phones.
Uh-huh.
I basically scheduled all of the on-air promos and graphics for the channel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like you had certain specific priorities, but I can pick when and where I would place it, you know, during the day on the log, so.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it was cool, and it was so different from music.
Mm-hmm.
There were, like, no egos. It was, like, a real family. I mean, really, they had, like, Fridays. We got to, like, have free ice cream. It was, like, just a real... It was such a different culture. And I don't know if it was because it was cable or what, but there was no line between executive and, like, coordinators. Like, we were all just one big family, which is so great. So it was for a while.
I feel like that's probably rare.
Everybody knew I was a musician and an artist. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to lie about that. So this was like a good side gig, even though it paid my bills and gave me benefits.
With the CDs, I imagine that would cost quite a bit of money to make, right?
Absolutely. Like, I wasn't doing full albums. I was doing like 3 or 4 songs. Like the second one I did, I wasn't so proud of. I worked with this like kind of producer that I thought would maybe do something for me.
Like open some doors, maybe?
Yeah, like he was working with Macy Gray at the time, and so I thought, oh, you know, but I realized when we were working together that we didn't match in terms of, like, who I was as an artist, and, you know, because a producer is very similar to, like, what a director would be for a film.
Yeah.
You don't have the same vision, then it really, the song could be great, but it can be destroyed in production. Like,
yeah. You
add the wrong kind of drum, you add the wrong kind of vocal timbre. I mean, all this stuff really affects the final product, and just by the end, I was like... isn't really the direction I was going in, you know. So, but then the CD after that, I worked with somebody who had that Music Connection magazine, whatever, and he was phenomenal. He was really so important to understand, this is what it should feel like in a studio. He's enhancing me and pushing me, but in good ways, you know. And so yeah, I paid for all of it, and didn't really see much return. I just thought, well, this is what you do, you know. So I ordered, you know, the 500 CDs and did, you know, paid for the pictures and the whole thing. And this is before we even did websites for ourselves. I had boxes and boxes of CDs. Every show I would sell a few. I would give a lot away,
right.
You know, a lot of it was just promotion. That's what I did. And I spent, you know, thousands and thousands, all my, whatever money I had.
Yeah.
Now it's so much easier.
Really?
You can get away. Yes.
Putting it up on Bandcamp or SoundCloud or something.
I mean, my producer and I, we did everything in his room.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to pay for studio time. There's no real recording studios anymore. I mean, unless you're like a big band or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you can basically do it all on your own. It's so... economically just save so much time and space. You don't have to deal with CDs anymore. I don't order CDs. I do everything online, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really changed for the better, I feel. So I was approaching 30, and I had been at Fox Family, then it turned to ABC Family Channel. Wow. Yeah, it's like you blink and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this little job that was going to be temporary is now 5 years.
Wow.
And I had gotten promoted. The girl that was two of us doing it, and then I became one. It was just one. So I made good money. It was so easy. I could leave whenever I wanted. It was so flexible that it's like, why would I leave?
Yeah.
You know? And I loved the people. But then it started to occur to me, like, well, this is like, too comfortable. Like, I don't want this to blink and then another 5 years goes by. You know what I mean? I've got to do something. And that's around the time that I've decided to pick up a video camera and start doing video diaries. Because what inspired me to do it all was Jerry Seinfeld did a documentary called Comedian. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
So it's all about what it's like to be a comedian, how and it follows like three different types of comedians: the novice, the beginner, the one that kind of has some success, and then the somebody like the Jerry Seinfelds, where they're all kind of following their journey, how they go to open mics and da da da. And I was like, I relate to this life, even though I'm not a comedian. So I just started talking. And then the most amazing thing happened, where I just got so comfortable talking about my thoughts and my feelings to this video camera, that's when I started to share, like, you know what, I'm really not happy and maybe I want a big change. And that's when I started to talk about maybe I want to move to New York. And it just like all came out just from like being that open and honest to this video camera. So, and like, I believe when you put something out there, the universe kind of meets you. Because I had never given it a shot where there was nothing to fall back on. I've always had a steady job, something else in the background. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what would it feel like if I just came to New York and I was like a bartender or something, you know, where it was just a temporary job and something I would never see myself doing because I don't even drink, you know? So I did that. I sold everything I owned. Mm-hmm. Like, I was giving up a lot at 30, you know, moving back to roommates. I mean, I had my own apartment, nice apartment in LA, you know what I mean? With air conditioning and holding. But like, you know, closets and all that
closets.
Stuff. But, right. You know, it didn't feel scary. I mean, people ask me that, but I was so excited. It was like becoming a new person, or becoming the person that I always wanted to be, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is who I am. I'm somebody that takes risks. I'm somebody that just goes all out, you know, like, F the, you know, corporate world. That's not me, you know? Like, what was I doing there? I realized so many things, that I was living very safe. Oh, but so anyways, I went on Craigslist and I found a place in Astoria. And just the way that she wrote the ad was like, you know, they're all artists. And that's the other thing. I had no clue to what it was like to be a musical theater artist here. Or even just Broadway. I mean, just the types of personalities. I'd been so inundated with, like, the Hollywood types that really turned me off. Or I didn't even realize it turned me off until I moved to New York. And how much... I used to be like, ugh, if you're an actor. And not that I would roll my eyes, but a little bit. Because in L.A., it was like, everybody's an actor. Everybody is an actor. But not even for, like... It was just to... I don't know. Like, because they felt like they can be famous.
Yeah, it was the right reason.
Right. So when I moved to New York, like, I found real artists, like, really amazing people who were like me. And so first of all, can I just tell your listeners, you don't need to spend a lot of money for bartending school, okay?
Well, that's what was going to be my question, yeah.
You do not, okay?
Yeah, I worked in restaurants for a long time, and actually my restaurant would not hire people out of bartending school.
Well, listen, I didn't know anything about drinks, because I don't drink, I'm not a drinker, just wasn't my thing. And I thought, well, how else would I learn,
right?
So I look online, you know, and money, I had money. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. So I spent so much money on this bartending school. And there was, like, probably a million others that I could have saved so much money. But whatever. So I go to bartending school. I had a friend of a friend who knew somebody at Bulmore Lanes.
Oh, yeah.
Bulmore at university, which is now gone, which is so crazy.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't realize that.
So that was like that's a big place, you know? So she hooked me up with like an interview. So I sat down, and this is the other thing I learned. If you're attractive and you're female, it's pretty easy to get a bartending job, you know?
Yeah.
So she was like, well, I don't know. You're just at a bartending school. I'm like, listen, I know how I'm very quick at learning. I know how to handle people. I'm like, you will not be sorry. Like, I was just so confident because, you know, again, I didn't care. It was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And she just loved it and she hired me, you know? And I was very honest. I had no experience, you know? So I went through the training, which was like 2 days or whatever, and I worked there for 6 months, and I did not like it. As you can imagine.
Gone.
Well, it was just, you know, and here's the other thing. I was living what I thought I should live. Yeah. Like a cliche that I thought, okay, I'm going to be that struggling artist working bartending. I never thought, well, I don't drink. Why would I want to be around people that drink all the time and serve them drinks? Like, that's not who I am. But I wasn't thinking that way. I just thought, what's the quickest way to make money and fastest way? And so, but the thing is, it's so taxing on your body. It's so, I mean, you're constantly up like all hours of the night and people want to, you know, give you more shifts.
The hours are the worst.
It's horrible. And the people. But during that, I ended up getting a job at the Sports Club LA, working the front desk, which was this very luxurious gym, which felt more like me, because I'm like, well, I love yoga, maybe I'll work at the front desk. And that ended up being a really crucial job for me. I met a lot of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because when you're at the front desk of a really nice gym, you know, that repeated exposure to all the clientele, like, they know you, and then they want to help you, and then that, you know what I mean? Well, the first year of my New York life was, it was kind of like a big storm of just stuff, where it was like, you know, I met a producer right away who was like, you're amazing, let's, you know, and he was like pitching my stuff to, at the time, the head of blah, 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 and then I met the guy at the gym who wanted to sign me as an indie, I mean, all this, like, really great stuff started happening right away, or it felt right away, and then it all kind of crashed right away, were just huge disappointments and nothing really coming into fruition, and what am I doing with my life, and, you know, my one of my closest friends moving away, I mean, just, like, all this stuff really kind of came crashing down, but I learned something, which is that, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, it doesn't matter what comes along your way, like, that fundamental doubt will cause everything to fall through. So I was videotaping and doing the video diaries and bringing it everywhere, and I have 10 years of my journey on film.
And what is it called?
The Dream Diaries. When you have this huge dream and it doesn't work out in the way that you thought, I mean, that's some serious stuff you need to deal with.
Yeah,
you
know? Absolutely.
There's a ton of people in the world that just choose to close their door on their heart and just go in another direction and never talk about it again. And I'm just somebody that can't do that. And so I was like, please help me figure this stuff out, because I'm just like an emotional wreck. And thankfully, this wonderful therapist had introduced me to this workshop, and I was just starting to understand that my thoughts and my words were starting to create my own reality, that I was contributing to this. So at the time I was working at Spike. I was like, well, what can I do since I'm here? Well, I have this film, I have all this footage, like, it's a part of MTV, like, maybe somebody can help me with it, right? So I started to just put a trailer together just to kind of give people an idea. And then I approached my boss and I said, I have something I want you to take a look at. You know, with things like, you know, MTV at the time was airing similar kinds of docuseries, you know, like about artists, whatever. And so I'm like, I don't know if this is, you know, I was also older, so I'm like, maybe it's a VH1 thing. I don't know. But it's like, you know, MTV Networks is very open about supporting their staff, supporting, you know, because everybody was doing like 10 other things besides what they were doing, which was really cool. And that was another difference between, I felt, cable TV versus music. And he gave me his feedback, and then I showed it to a couple of other people. They gave me their feedback, and then I showed it to this guy who was the head of programming, and he was like so supportive, and he called me, and I never even met this guy. I was like, I just want to say I really believe in this, I think it's great, and here's some ideas of avenues you can take it to. I'm like, awesome, you know,
that's cool. Yes. Yeah, really was, wonderful.
That's what I mean, like, you just kind of keep knocking on people's door until maybe you find somebody that gets it or gets what you're trying, gets your vision. I ended up quitting that job after a long sort of period of stop waiting, just quit. Like, so I took this big leap of faith, and I was like, I instead of thinking, you know, I need something else to kind of, like, just get by, I'm like, what else do I really love? Well, I love yoga, so maybe I'll just, you know, sign up for yoga teacher training and see what happens, you know? Because I had actually talked to a lot of people who had, like, transitioned from one career to the next, and they all told me it's about taking baby steps. Because the thing that's so daunting about, you know, if you're not happy in something, the idea of, like, getting out is like, well, what else can I do? And then you just go mad, and it's like years go by and you never answer that question. Well, start with something small. Like, what else do you love? Anyways, I went through yoga teacher training. Still didn't know if I can be a teacher or support myself, but I think I was transcribing everything because it was like 10 years of like stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I caught this video diary where I was 29, just before I moved to New York, and I was saying, you know, if 5 years from now I'm still working a corporate job while doing music on the side, and to have to look at myself in the mirror and say, you're still here. Like, that's my biggest fear. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching myself at 29 talk to my now 35-year-old self, and I'm like, what the fuck? Again, it's like this huge wake-up call, like the universe sending me this sign. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? What are you waiting for? So I just walked in and I quit. I gave 2 weeks notice. So when I left, right before I left, I was like, okay, I'm going to just send this to everybody. And I sent it to my trailer. Mm-hmm. I sent it to the head of MTV Networks Group. I can't remember the guy's name, but he got back to me like this. And he just wrote something like, you know, I like your story, but you want people to remember you for your music, not your changing hairstyles, because there's a joke in the trailer. And I thought, well, no, I want people to remember me for my story.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, again, just somebody's opinion that kind of missed, you know? So, I'm like, but that's okay. He got back to me, and I, you know what I mean? I wanted to exhaust every possibility. So, then I left, and then, it was, like, the best thing in the world. You know, I started to do so much work on the whole, you know, just diving into self-help and self-improvement, and I was like, well, what do I value? Like, what are my values? Instead of, like, what is society telling me I should do? Because obviously I'm so far from, like, what society had in store for me in terms of, like, convention. Like, I should be married with kids and the whole thing. Like, that's not me. So what is me? Like, what's going to make me happy? Well, I value freedom and independence in my day. I value I love going to different places all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. I value, you know, being able to laugh freely, you know, every day, you know? I value going into repeated exposure with people. I like being a leader. I mean, it was just, like, all these things that I had written down, like, how I want to feel in my new job before I even realized it was yoga, so that I can be happy every day and not wait for something to come along and make me happy, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then you finished the teacher training.
Yeah.
And then was there, like, a placement with that, or?
No, you have to hustle. But because I was, like, you know, came from the artist world, I was like, psh, this is nothing. You know what I mean? Like, because you have to audition. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have to audition for these gigs. But see, like, if somebody said no, I just kept coming back. I went to an audition 4 times until I got hired. Because that's amazing. I just didn't take it personally.
How do these work? Is it like a group thing?
Yeah, it's a group thing. They call you randomly, just similar to open mic, really. Yeah. They call you randomly, and you have to give your 3 minutes teaching, and it has to be like according to the sequence that you were already in, so you have to be like on your toes about that. I mean, it's competitive to be a yoga teacher in New York, for sure. But I think because I had so much experience of, like, rejection and not feeling good enough with music, this was, like, easy. So I hadn't been talking about it, but I was still recording. Like, I recorded when I quit, a diary there. I recorded shows and all that stuff. And then I had spoken to a friend, and she's like, well, what's going on with your film? And I was like, oh, I don't know. She's like, you need to keep talking. Like, this is a whole other chapter to your life that's right. So important and so valuable. Like, talk. I was trying to upload footage because at this point I just bought a new camera. This is, like, already 6 years, 7 years into it, where it's, like, now everything's digital. Mm-hmm. So I went from analog to digital, and I lost, because one of my hard drives died, and this is so sad, I lost a year of footage.
Oh, shit.
I know. And I was, like, devastated. But then it was this beautiful moment of, here I had this happen, and I was, like, so, because, you know, when things happen like this, like, the universe just kind of sweeps in and pulls the rug out under you, you wonder if it's, like, this bigger sign. Like, is this, like, should I just stop doing this? Like, is this me, like, just forget about the whole thing, you know? So I was kind of going into that mindset, and I had to go teach a class. And I get up, and I start teaching. And I was actually a kid's yoga class, because at that point I was like, I'll take anything, like, you know? Yeah. And by the end of it, I'm laughing, and I'm singing along with the kid, and we're doing all this. And I completely, like, forgot about why I was so upset, and I realized something, like, this is what it's about. When you are in service of other people and you get out of your own mind, like, that's what life is about. And then I just was like, no, who cares?
Yeah.
Next. So I started to talk again. That's the last part of the film, and that's the most meaningful, because I think, like I was saying earlier, is when you have a dream, or even if you have an idea of, like, how you want your life to be and it doesn't work out that way, nobody talks about it after that, where I'm always like, but what happened to all that energy and all that, like, where does that go? And so you see that transition and how it just gets transformed into, like, you know, now I get to get up and kind of perform in front of, you know, teaching students, and now I've added music, you know, where I have yoga unplugged class, and I sing at the end of my classes, and it's become this whole full circle. I was sending out my stuff to different editors, will you help me with this? And mm-hmm. it was like, yeah, and then it was taking so long, and it was just like this cycle of like, ugh, you know? So I joined IFP, which is the Independent Film Project. So I go to this mixer, and within the first 5 minutes, somebody's asking me what I'm doing there, and I'm telling them about my project. Oh, you should submit it to the IFP documentary, whatever, lab, where they choose like 10 up-and-coming, you know, first-timer documentaries, and they basically nurture you through the whole process of making the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So I'm like, oh, when's the deadline is Tuesday, and it was like maybe a Saturday, right? Yeah. So I was like, oh, yeah, I saw that, but, you know, I don't really have anything. Well, no, but they'll accept whatever. I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, on to the next person. Telling about a project. Oh, did you hear about the thing? And I was like, I heard, but, you know, it's like in 5 days. Like, how am I going to, you know, whatever. Third person was like, you need to submit. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Go home that night, locked myself in my room, and I basically edited 45 minutes of my film. And then as I started putting it together, I'm like, I think I have a knack for it, you know? So anyways, I submitted it. I didn't get in, but I was like, still, well, let me just keep doing this.
It, like, lit a fire under your ass to do it.
Yes,
yeah.
It really did. And then I went to a Sundance workshop thing. Again, I'm just, like, putting myself into situations where I can meet the right people or whatever, you know? And I met this pretty well-known editor, but he went to NYU, whatever. And I was, like, telling him about my project. I'm like, would you mind looking at it and just giving your feedback? And he was like, sure. And he got back to me right away and was like, I think, you know, you definitely have something here. He's like, here's my suggestion of how to put things together. And it was really, but again, like, you have to just sort of approach people and just not be afraid of no, and just, even if they say no, move on to the next person. Like, it's okay. So I just kept going, and then it took me about a year and a half to finish editing the film. I went to an IFP, again, function or whatever, and I'm really not, like, a party person. I'm, like, when I see massive amounts of people, like, I just kind of want to go somewhere else. Like, I'm not that kind of person. So, and everybody's, like, pitching, and it's, like, that kind of party.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, ugh. So I walk away, and I'm, like, in the lounge area, and there's this other guy, and we're talking. Turns out he owns a sound studio. He's a sound, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I start telling him about my project. He's like, oh, well, we have a screening room. I'd love to see it. And I'm like, okay. So I had the 60, now it was like 60 minutes. This is like a few years ago. I'm like, we watched it, and to see it on the big screen was like the most profound experience. Like,
yeah.
I was just like shakes. And so that was really, and then to see the reaction and to hear the reaction was so amazing. So that was like the first moment I was like, wow, I think I have something really special, you know? So from there, it took like 2 years for me to finish. To where it felt like, okay, this is the ending that I want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the screening at NYU, and I invited some of my students, and it was a feedback screening, because I knew I was going to be too close to the project to, like, have a discussion afterwards, so I just gave them, like, questions and had them fill out the answers on paper, so it was all anonymous. And also, I just think to see yourself, you know, in those moments, there is so much beauty in that, you know? And you cannot shame yourself for feeling that. Like, you have to feel it. You have to allow yourself to feel it. It's so important to the journey. It's so important to the growth of you as an individual. So at the time, it felt like all I do is complain, but really, no, like, the film would not be what it is if I didn't have that there.
And so now is it locked? Like, is it frozen?
No, because it's still only through iMovie. So no, I'm still looking for a way to get it fully, you know, complete it, like, locked in the whole thing. So after I did the screening in LA, where I invited my family.
Oh, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big, big deal. I think I wanted them to say something. I wanted them to be like, I get it, or I see you, or I understand. Nothing. Like, my dad had to leave early. Like, my mom told me I cussed too much. You know what I mean? It was just like, and then I realized, like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to be okay Like, I love my parents. They love me. They can only give me what they have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't expect them. Like, if their world is like this, and this is how they were brought up, I can't expect them to get somebody who's, like, all of this, you know? And it's okay. And it's okay. And it's okay. Like, it's enough. Like, they showed up. My mom brought snacks. Like, she's there to support me. She just may not have the words, you know, to say what I want her to say. But it's okay. So, I turned 40 last year, June. And I had this idea. I was like, let me, what if I did, you know, 40 fearless acts where it's like every day I'm going to do something different. I'm going to do something that scares me and, you know, and then I'll share it on social media. And, you know, because at that point I still was hearing this whisper of like, you have so much, there's even more, like you're playing it safe still. So once I did that, everything just kind of changed because I really got an opportunity to really shed a lot of shame of where I am in my life, of being 40 and single or, you know, not married or whatever. And also, I didn't realize I even had the kind of judgment that I had against myself. But, you know, when you start to open up and share yourself and step into situations that you don't normally do, shit comes up. You know, because I wasn't just like, oh, it wasn't about, like, jumping out of a plane. It was like I was, you know, knocking on my doors to introduce myself to everybody in my apartment building. And that was a fearless one. I got naked in an art class. I tried to try on a wedding dress as a single person. I just wanted to see what it was like to see myself as a bride. You know, like, all of this. So to share that on social media was so scary, something I've never done before. I mean, so that was a huge gift, really, for me. And so I had to deal with a lot. So that took up a lot of this year. And then I thought, well, I can do something with this film, which is I could actually help people find out, like, you know, create a life that they love. I mean, I get complimented all the time, you know, my energy, blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a reason, you know, I actually do the work and I created all these great tools and I want to share that. So I did a workshop around the film. I just put it together on, in April. I did my first one, which was exciting and scary. You know, sometimes you just have to start before you feel ready. So now I'm putting all of it together in a book, actually, my 40 Fearless Acts. Yeah. The challenge was I never felt like anybody talked about the in-between. It's like people got really successful.
Yeah.
And then the people that struggle. But, like, what about the in-between? Like, do those people who are really successful ever, like, feel bad about anything? You know what I mean?
Well, that's what we try to do a lot here is talk to people, because I feel like you hear these really successful people, and it's almost like they skipped over the hard parts.
Yes,
it's just kind of like, wait a second, back up. Like,
right,
I don't know.
Right. So I was like, well, let's talk about, you know, what it really is like. It's about making really smart choices that align with who you are every moment of every day. You know, who you hang out with, what do you spend the most time talking about, thinking about, worrying about, like really checking in. Always, you know, and then having fun too.
How would someone be able to, like, find out information about this?
Yeah, just go on my website, charlenelite.com, and that's charlenelite, and sign up for my newsletter. I send something out every week, and I'm working on something where I want to work on a digital sort of way where you don't have to be in New York City to maybe take my workshop. It's something that, you know, you can view the film on your computer at home, but then we will do like a 6-week series of different things to develop these tools in your toolbox and kind of get you going.
Oh, that's great. And so then if people want to find your music, can they find that through the website?
Absolutely.
As well?
Yeah.
So for my hack today, I'm going to hark back on something that you said that really means a lot to me personally about surrounding yourself with good people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the energy that you want around you and the kind of space that you create for yourself is populated with these great people, then your life is a lot better.
And I'm gonna, it's almost like a hack for me because I really want to see it. That, was it The Comedian? Is that what you said?
Comedian.
Yeah, Comedian. I'm gonna suggest it and I haven't even seen it. but I really want to see that. So it just sounds like it's like really fascinating and relatable to to what we do and what we're interested in.
I would say self-love. You know, the voices in your head, the things that you tell yourself when you're down. If you can be much more loving to yourself, much more compassionate, it's so important, especially in those moments where you are just hanging on by a thread, to just tell yourself, like, it's going to be okay. And I'll get through this. And it's okay to feel this way. And by doing that, you just extend that to other people. You can't help.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Sweet Soubrettes, All That Glitters from the album Days and Nights. You can go to the website, www.classactorhack.com.
You can email us at podcast@classactorhack.com. You should subscribe to us on Stitcher and iTunes.
And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Awesome.
All right.
And me too. Me too. Yeah.
Can you find it at Charlene Light?
Yeah, at Charlene Light, yeah.
Perfect. Woo! If anything, my mother will listen to it.